Well, I think all stakeholders have to be in. And I'd say it starts with, are you going to be true to the mission? And our true north is we're going to change farmer poverty. Mm. That's it. It's not, and there's not all these other things that compete with that. So that's who we hire. That's how we hold people accountable. That's the customers that we choose to engage with. Mm-hmm. It's our investors. It's our board of directors. It's holistic, because when you start to deviate throughout, and that's what's so challenging, and you know this in your conversations, you know what gets difficult, because over time it starts to dilute, right? So you have to have this holistic buy-in from everybody to make it work.
Hello, my name is Soyini Koch, and I want us to take a journey together. There's a movement in business. Some call it stakeholder capitalism. Others call it purpose-led business. Others call it profits through purpose, going beyond profits, or we like to call it conscious capitalism. Regardless of what you like to call it, there are business leaders all over the world committing to and doing their very best to use their powers for good and not for evil. So I want you to join me in learning how to do this conscious capitalism thing better and better, one conversation at a time. So welcome to Capitalism Done Right, brought to you by CEO Exclusive and Conscious Capitalism Atlanta. In this show, I'm talking with Tom Matheson, who's the president of Thrive Coffee, in their office. And I'm very, very excited to do the interview in person. And I'm even more excited that Tom is a great example of a CEO who's been thinking about and integrating stakeholder capitalism into his own leadership for quite some time. He is not a novice, and he walks his talk. And in particular, I want you to listen carefully for the way that he discusses truly embracing the farmers in his supply chain as partners and important stakeholders. And this is very new, because Thrive started to do this in a way that no company has done before, all the way back to the British East India Company, which was founded in the year 1600. And we know what life was like back in 1600. And Thrive and Tom are using their company to transform generational poverty while growing a profitable and thriving business. And yes, that pun was intended. I hope you enjoy the show. All right, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Capitalism Done Right, brought to you by CEO Exclusive and the Atlanta chapter of Conscious Capitalism. I am really delighted to be having a conversation with Tom Matheson, president of Thrive International. And, you know, one of the reasons why I'm so delighted to be here is that we've had many conversations about conscious capitalism. And as I think about conscious businesses, I think of Thrive as like the one of the most clear and perfect archetypes of what I would consider to be a conscious business. And so we're actually here at Thrive this morning, as you can see. Tom, I would love for you to start us off by just sharing your thoughts on why Thrive is a conscious business. Why does it matter? And how does conscious capitalism show up in the operations of the company?
Well, first of all, it's great to see you again. Great to be back together. I appreciate all the dialogue. And it's great to be here this morning. So, no, it's a great question. And I think from the very beginning, we sought out, we saw a problem in the world. And we built a business around, could we do something to solve that problem? So it wasn't, we didn't go out to start a coffee business, a tea business, and then down the road, let's try to pivot to something that was good for people, for humanity. We really saw the problem.
Which was
there is a non-inclusive economic model. Mm-hmm. The supply chain for hundreds of years has been established in a way where all of the players don't succeed. And so when we took a look at that and we started to peel back the onion, we saw that at the bottom of that chain, and it's really the most important part of the chain, is the farmers.
Right.
They take all the risk. They're brilliant at what they do. They're multi-generation, mm-hmm. talented at being great coffee producers, but somehow they're not included in the overall supply chain. They had no control over their destiny by virtue of how the way the supply chain has been set up. And so I think when we looked at that, we said, well, that doesn't make sense. Why is it that way? And you start asking all these questions and you come down to, well, why can we not take that on and do something different? It's very disruptive.
Yeah, and so I want to also clarify that a part of that was the economics. Like you were said that they were not being fully included. They weren't being included in the economic benefit as
Correct.
Much, right? And
Absolutely.
That was another part of the problem that you were taking on. Okay, great.
It was really all about the economics, right. Which is why, because you can look at the product line and you see the demand here and around the world is up. Okay. It's a high demand. We're consuming it this morning. So right. We know, we love it. We can't live without our coffee and tea. So therefore, if there's growth, why is that growth not a benefit to the farmer?
Right.
And that's ultimately what we saw. And I said, okay, well, that's fundamentally not right. So can we do something different? Something disruptive, something I think a lot of people thought we were crazy. It took multiple years. And even the farmers who trusted us, that was not a fast road of trust because they've seen different ideas over the years. And people talk about, and by the way, if you go in these industry symposiums and what have you, everybody knows the problem. Mm-hmm. They do. The question is, who's going to take it on?
Right.
So ultimately, that's why we're a conscious capital business, because the business is the mission and the mission's the business. We didn't separate the two. So we think of it as agricultural mission. What can we do to change the supply chain in a way? And coffee and tea were the obvious ones because they were so large and everybody is involved in that. But if you look at other agricultural commodities, it really is not that different. And so ultimately we hope to get there.
Right. Wow, that's really great. And we'll come back to the question about the operations and how you're seeing these principles show up in the operations. But I think it would be helpful for folks to hear a little bit more about how you think about balancing the needs of stakeholders. So one of the things that I hear is that you're kind of balancing the needs of multiple stakeholders. And so I would love for you to just talk a little bit about your philosophy on, you know, having stakeholders be more equally considered.
Right.
Included is the word you use.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think all stakeholders have to be in. And I'd say it starts with, are you going to be true to the mission? And our true north is we're going to change farmer poverty. Mm. That's it. It's not, and there's not all these other things that compete with that. So that's who we hire. That's how we hold people accountable. That's the customers that we choose to engage with. Mm-hmm. It's our investors. It's our board of directors. It's holistic. Because when you start to deviate throughout, and that's what's so challenging, and you know this in your conversations, you know what gets difficult, because over time it starts to dilute, right? So you have to have this holistic buy-in from everybody to make it work. Mm-hmm. But it starts with us as leadership. We have to, decision-making has to be through that lens. The hires, the cultural, you know, what we put together culturally here and how we nurture that has to be always revolving around, why are we here? Why do we do what we do? Now, we're a for-profit. We're proud of that because we believe that for-profit is going to bring the best people, the best solutions, is going to bring the best capital to go tackle this because it's not an easy thing to go after. Mm-hmm. And so we have the same pressures that everybody else has. We still have to provide a financial return because this doesn't happen losing money. Right. We have to be profitable. We do have investors. We do have stakeholders, bankers, accountants, like everybody else.
Right.
This is not a nonprofit company. So we have to live, you know, that double-edged sword all of the time. But at the end of the day, we believed that mission is our competitive advantage as well.
So that's a perfect segue into the thesis of the show, which is that conscious capitalism is actually a better way to do business. And we want to have substantive conversations about the financial impact and why it's a better way financially to do business. So what are you seeing in terms of how this philosophy is actually leading to a more profitable, sustainable economic model?
Okay. And I know there's a lot of discussion about this out there with ESG and the different initiatives. And I'll be honest, we did not, our the competitive advantage we saw in the business we wanted to build, we didn't do it with this idea that we were going to outperform economically necessarily. We started off, we're going to have two scorecards. Mm. We're going to have the traditional financial ones, because that's how you run good businesses and that's how we sustain ourselves and that's how we grow When we grow, we serve more farmers. That's fundamental. But we have another scorecard, and we track impact, financial impact, not for us, but the financial impact for our stakeholder being the farmer. Mm. So we look at differentials between what they would normally make in the market versus what they do with us. So they're paid more. It's stable. It's long term. These are things that take them out of the commodity challenges, mm-hmm. things that they're great at what they do, and yet some macroeconomic commodity index thing makes the difference between education, eating, things like that that we take for granted. So I think for us, we want to run a great business. We know we have to be profitable. We need to grow. But our scorecard, we have a different one. And so I think we also want to be careful saying that we're not trying to necessarily outperform. As a matter of fact, we make sacrifices to compete where we compete. Mm. Because we're willing to stand by. We fundamentally believe that the mission matters. We do. And our customers believe that as well. Mm. And that's where this gets really exciting, is we start to engage large global brands into this journey. And by the way, their customers, it matters to them. So we do a lot of business to business, B2B, but we know that the brands that we work with, their customers care too. So then this becomes this, you know, halo effect to the brands that we have a bunch of people that are trying to do something special and unique in the world. And if you deliver it with quality, which we do, it's all, quality is very, very important here. You have to deliver an outstanding product. Thank you. Because without that, then it becomes another form of philanthropy, charity, which becomes, you know, you fall into this sort of toxic dependent type of charity concept, which I think we can say that there's a lot of that hasn't really worked. So full circle, you know, passionate about the power of business, that we can solve, we can solve world problems faster, better than nonprofits, NGOs can do. Mm.
Great. And so as you think about some of the large global brands that you serve, like Chick-fil-A or like Delta.
Yes.
And you know, their commitment to this way of thinking about business, you know, and they're actually voting with their feet, so to speak. Decided to work with you and chosen to work with you and maybe not to work with others. I wonder about you know, how you engender more of that, because you said there's sacrifice in there. I'm hearing that you're saying that there's economic trade-offs associated with it, with this. And how do people begin or how do you engender some of that inspiration for people to maybe choose to have two ways of measuring success?
I mean, I think it's a courage thing. Mm. You know, I think if I look at our investor or stakeholder base, I mean, they had to be okay with this. Mm. You know, that this kind of dual scorecard concept matters. And I think, by the way, everybody would tell you that they care. They do. But there's, I think, this moment of courage that has to take place that we believe in the long term as well. So I think there's an intersection out there that we also believe that maybe we can outperform somebody down there. Mm-hmm. But we have to run a very, you know, intelligent, automated, scalable business to get there. But there are sacrifices between here and there. Mm. But for us, if you deviate from that, then you've just become everyone else. So let's just true business fundamentals, then we've given up our competitive advantage. So we just have to have, you know, in our heart, believe and know that our mission is the competitive advantage. We have to stay true to that mission. That's our true north. And let's just keep rocking there. And then you end up with customers that really, really do care. And you mentioned too, and we're, you know, super thankful that they're our customers, but they do care. Mm-hmm. And they're putting, you know, they're putting their money where their mouth is. Right. And they're saying, hey, we want to support a business like Thrive. We believe in what they're doing. And our customers care too. And there's a lot of data that says customers are also, by the way, willing to back that up financially as well.
Right.
And I think that's what's really beginning to change now, because as there's been more and more, whether we call that the millennials or Gen Z or whoever's pushing that, people are looking at, you know, what is the social impact really of this company? What are they saying? Is that real? Is that authentic? Mm. And I am willing to pay more for that. And I believe that because we're seeing that. Mm. And once that happens, then I think there's got to be this next And what you're really passionate about is how do we get those really internal stakeholders, board of directors, to coincide with that and have the courage to say, you know, we can still do this.
Yeah.
You know? And,
yeah.
And you can.
Yeah.
And you can.
It's interesting because I have two questions. One is, you said that you're part of what you're really concerned about is changing farmer poverty or eliminating farmer poverty. A lot of people don't care, right? Like they were willing to make profits and not necessarily care about the financial impact or the implications for whoever the stakeholders are that surround the profit that they make. And so I do wonder about that, like that is a stand. Like we care about the impact that we're having on other people because, you know, it would appear, at least externally, that there are a lot of people who don't necessarily care.
Correct.
And, yeah. And right. So I guess, you know, there's that. You know, how do you think about us who do care creating incentives for the people that don't to actually move things along? Yeah. Have you thought about that at all?
I mean, we're in an environment where everybody has a social impact passion, right? And they're not all the same. You know, in each of you know, there may be different agendas that we're all trying to influence. We think this is a worthy one because it's millions and millions of people. And what we know is that the impact it has on these communities. So it becomes very exponential. So what we love, what we're passionate about is that you change one at a time, but that one at a time changes a community. The community begins to develop, and then it becomes, it's beyond us. And that's, when we talk about sustainability, that's sustainability.
Right.
Sustainability is not, again, toxic charity. This is something that they're good at what they do. They know their communities. They know their products. They know how to do this better than we'll ever know how to do it. The question is, can we empower them in a way that now they're becoming this whole group of mini entrepreneurs? Because guess what? Once you get past your, you know, survival issues, you know, education, you know, food and all of those things, then they begin to invest in themselves and their businesses. They become then, they can grow, they can buy more land, they can do different things. And then when that community starts to rally around that, then infrastructure takes place. You know, it's schools and churches and sanitation and clean water and all those other things. So we think it's exponential and that's what gets us excited. And we've been doing it long enough now that we see that.
Great. And so where are you seeing that show up as a financial benefit? You mentioned your competitive advantage. So on your traditional scorecard,
yeah.
Where are you seeing some of the benefits of leading this way?
I mean, it's growth.
Mm.
You know, so who, you know, Delta Airlines is a new customer partner for us. We're proud and honored. We're honored to have them. And we love the thought process around what they're doing. That's proof of that. That's somebody saying, okay, we want to be on that journey. And so that's on the scorecard. It'll be on the scorecard as we grow together. Mm-hmm. And as we continue to add customers like that, that's where we, and that's our call. I mean, that's our job is to go grow. The mission doesn't work if we don't grow.
Mm, right.
I mean, we can stop right now and say, oh, we're doing something well, but our vision and our passion is let's grow this exponentially because we bring more stakeholders in. Obviously, we have impact more and more farmers. The beauty of that program that you just referenced with Delta is it's now taking us into new countries. So we do a lot of work in Central and South America, which is typical of coffee, but now we're in Rwanda, we're in Egypt, we're in China, we're India, all these other places that we're now able to now influence different parts, and each one of those then becomes exponential, we hope, as well. So each thing leads to another, and growth is our job, but that's the scorecard. And if we grow, then that should also lead to, if we're running a good company, which we believe we do and we'll continue to do, that should lead to profits. Those profits get reinvested in ways that maintain what we do here, and it all matters. Because you have to run, whether, again, it's a nonprofit or a profit, we have to run good businesses. It all falls apart. Then, it just becomes another form of charity or a nonprofit, and that's not what we're trying to do.
Excellent. So, to go back to your earlier in the conversation when we were talking about, you know, there, you grew up this way, you grew up with this philosophy in your DNA. I'm wondering what advice or thoughts you have about companies that are thinking about and trying to incorporate some of the conscious capitalism tenets into their existing business.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we were maybe lucky in a sense, or however you want to look at it, that we didn't have to pivot a business is what you're talking about. And it's, I don't want to underestimate how difficult that is, because you already have an existing group of stakeholders, and it's not easy to go turn that.
Right.
You know, I think what I would recommend, I think, is just start asking questions, you know, and I think it's developing this empathy or understanding around what do you do and how is that all done? I mean, every business has a supply chain all the way through a system. Has anybody really torn that apart? Who do we work with? What happens at that level? Who are there? Who are the stakeholders behind them and the people that they influence? And I think if you start to peel back that onion, or at least take the time to do that, and maybe there's nothing to be found there. Maybe there is. I would venture to guess that there probably is. And so I think if you start there, at least let's take the time to really unbundle what we do, how we do it, and what is our cultural bent? What is our purpose beyond just economics? What are we trying to accomplish? And listen, like it or not, it's going to dictate who comes and joins you as new talent. It's going to dictate your employee retention. Because guess what? This group of employees, and as we Gen Zs and millennials come in, they expect it. You know, our highest level of accountability for us, and we talked about that introductory, yeah. Like how do you stay on course? Well, it's our people. They come here for that purpose, and let me tell you, they hold us to the highest level of accountability. Mm. Are you doing what you say you're doing? And so I think for big companies or whoever's trying to steer, start off with education. And then I think you can have levels of impact in so many different areas. And I don't, it'll be unique for every company. But I'm not sure anybody really takes the time to, and usually if you look at large companies, their sustainability department is one mm-hmm. or two, right? You know that because you've been involved in that. So you see that it's what's lip service versus what's authentic. And authentic's got to have resources and an action plan to go after it.
Yeah, it has to show up in the actual operations of the business versus being siloed, you know, in a separate department like DE&I or wherever,
right?
If it's just kind of, like you said, one person in an office someplace, right. it doesn't tend to have the kind of impact that you've demonstrated. And so one of the things that I'm materially concerned about is how to have the conversation about conscious capitalism in a way that really moves people. In a way that we can start to engender some of the concern or the empathy you just mentioned for all of the various stakeholders. And I'm wondering, as you have these conversations with other CEOs and other business leaders, what your thought is on how to have the conversation in a way to generate the empathy that underlies the philosophy. Because you had to come to the conversation about farmer poverty from a commitment mm-hmm. to the farmer. And so that's the underlying premise that is the foundation of everything that you're doing. But without that assumption or that premise of empathy and care, the rest of it is just window dressing. And so how do I, you know, as we have these conversations with more and more people and more business leaders, how do we actually generate that empathy? Because that's, I think, for me, the desired outcome. You know, if I want every single CEO, business leader in the world leading their company this way, that underlying premise of care for all the stakeholders, I think, has to underlie it. So, yeah, how do you have that? How would you have this conversation with somebody who's new to conscious capitalism?
Well, one is I appreciate this dialogue because you're highlighting a story.
Right.
And people need those testimonials to have the courage to that. Maybe we could do that, right? So I think, and I think it also education. I mean, I think I was talking about there's schools are now understanding that this topic is big.
You mean like business schools?
Yeah, business school. Well, it doesn't even have to be a business school. School I referenced this morning, this is going to be offered to all elements of a very large school. It's not just business, because guess what? That influences healthcare. It influences all these other.
It sure does.
Right? It doesn't have to be purely a business problem or a business issue or a business school. You know, it's holistic.
Yeah.
Right. So I think talking about it, showing examples, and then I think at the end of the day, and you keep coming back to financials, it does. I mean, money always matters. At the end of the day, you can slice and dice, but it's always going to come back to that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that money trumps empathy.
Yeah, but I think part of this is also engaging with your customer. Mm. So every business has customers, whether it's B2C. What message are you going to send to the B2C customer or your B2B customers? What's important to them? And maybe there's some benefit mutually that you can provide to each other in engaging in partnerships around the story, right? And I think our B corporations, we're a certified B Corp. Right. You know, that's a global initiative. We've been a part of that now for 5 years. And that's part of the messaging, sustainable brands and all the different groups that are talking about this. But I still come back to, is it really authentic? Is it authentic? Or is it just a paragraph in the annual report? Mm-hmm. And you've seen those, right?
Yeah, a pledge.
And those are all good things, by the way. We're not, no judgment on any of it. Any philanthropy is good. The question, though, what you're getting to is at the core of the business or not, right?
Is an underlying business philosophy. Well, great. I thinking.
So while you're thinking, I want to come back to that whole empathy versus financial results, because that I think at the end of the day that is the challenge, right?
Right.
And I think we hope, and we're here to lead and talk about businesses starting to take empathy and really rolling with that. I hope through that there's a way that competitive advantages can be gained, that the financial results can be figured out. At the end of the day, those do compete. And I think the world is starting to shift. Mm-hmm. And we hope that we can all these conversations really help lead us there. Now for us, it starts with empathy, and then the financial impact I think comes alongside that. It's more of a symptom, where I know the traditional business model is not that.
Right.
My hope is, I think it's driven by two things. It's clearly the employees. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have new generations with different expectations. We know it's important. They know it's important, and they're going to expect it. And so to run a good business, we do that with great people. Great people have expectations, and we're going to build around that. I think that's important. And then ultimately, the consumer, whoever the end consumer is, they're embracing it too. And I think they want to be in the journey. They're willing to step up and make decisions on brands and possibly pay more to be with a brand that fits what they want to see happen in the world. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that. There's encouragement and growth in that. But to the core, there will always be that stress around those points. And I think if we see more and more businesses that are able to overcome that we can show good financial results while we're doing something really important, I think that's going to be a big win. I fundamentally believe we're on a track to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important that we do what we do, that we execute, that we grow, that we provide that inspiration, those testimonials, that we can go do that. And we can do that with really big, important global brands who influence a lot of customers around the world. So we believe that. I think there's a trend there. I don't believe we're there yet, but we can get there.
Yeah, and I certainly like my hope and aspiration, that's why we have capitalism done right, is that will be the case. But I'm also very realistic, maybe not cynical, but on the borderline of being cynical, that the structures that have kept capitalism looking the way that it does are very resilient. They're very persistent. Sure. And so, you know, those Gen Z, Gen X, millennials, as they age, you know, they're going to get mortgages, they're going to have children, they're going to need to, you know, want to send their kids to private school, and all the pressures that have made capitalism look the way that it looks, they're not going to go away. And so, I mean, I'm certainly very hopeful, that's why we're here, you know, that the 10% of people that are actually proving out the model can then inspire the other 99%. And so that's really the goal. It's like, for me, the analogy is like, for a long time, they said that a human being couldn't run a 4-minute mile. And then when one person did it, all of a sudden there were like 20 people that were able to then run a 4-minute mile afterwards because one person thrived, right? They were just, you know, one person can actually change the world. And so as we prove that it's possible and that it works, we hope to spur adoption for other people. But the data indicates that it's noisy, right? There are lots of companies that raise their hand and say, okay, we want to do this. And then the financial results don't come. So part of what we want to do is actually show how, because I don't think it's binary. I don't think that it's automatically the case that you're going to perform better financially if you lead through conscious business principles,
right?
Or that you're not, you know, you're going to perform not as well if you do it the other way. Obviously, that's not the case.
Right.
So we want to prove that you can do both. And I think that Thrive is a great example to do that.
I think, yeah, trying to outperform your group financially, I'm not sure that's the right goal. Mm. I would love to think that that's the case because you would argue if we've got aligned employees, we have a common purpose and mission and vision, that by nature of that alone, we should outperform the other businesses, right? And I think we believe in that as well. But not every business aligns that way. And I think for us, we hope that's true. We strive to do that every day. But we think that other scorecard, because at the end of the day, that's why we're doing what we do.
Right.
Every person in this company could go do something else, but they believe in a common purpose, that's worth, if I'm going to be away from my family 8 hours a day, I'd like to think that that's doing something other than just a paycheck. And so I think collectively, if we can roll all that up across other businesses, I think it becomes really exciting. Thriving humanity, we like to say, and that's what that does.
Well, thriving humanity, and thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you.
It's been great being here. And for those of you watching, this has been Capitalism Done Right with Tom Matheson, president of Thrive. Go out and do some good in your business.
Hey, thanks for listening. I know you're super busy. So let's consider what we can learn from this conversation with Tom that will make the investment of your time worthwhile. In terms of creating value for your business and for yourself, I think there are two ideas in the episode that I think are worth exploring. First, I really want to draw your attention to Tom's comment that there is just a parallel scorecard that Thrive thinks about when they think about creating value. And I would urge you to think and to consider that there actually just is a parallel value system of which that scorecard that Tom was describing represents. And I would say Tom and many other conscious business leaders actually have this parallel value system. So I've observed it with Tom, of course, and then in many of the companies and leaders that I've interviewed. Part of what drives the leaders to implement conscious capitalism is that money isn't the only thing that's important to them. And while the point and the thesis of capitalism done right is that conscious capitalism can be used to drive superior financial performance, I think this point about alternative values and just like putting value on other things and then creating a scorecard for the impact and how to measure and think about those things is actually really important. The other thing, you know, to get back to money and show me the money. So the other thing that I think is important to talk about that, you know, hopefully you heard in Tom's commentary is the note about attracting talent and attracting customers. So you've probably heard about it and maybe observed it in your own business that the next generation of millennials and Gen Zs who are employees and customers, they place value on stakeholder capitalism, the environment, culture, work-life balance, in a way that previous generations don't appear to have done. And they're willing to put their spending power and their paychecks where their mouth is. And so there's a line of thinking that says that companies will be forced to adopt conscious capitalism because they just won't be able to hire anyone if they don't. So as you could hear, you know, in the show, my expectations are pretty modest in this regard. Because there have been a lot of movements and a lot of idealistic young people who just become a lot less idealistic when they have the pressures that come along with having a mortgage and having kids and, you know, the pressures of maturing and growing up. And so to the extent that this trend around millennials and Gen Zs actually does hold, it will be entirely game changing because you can't run a company without people. So, don't you want to attract this younger generation of customers and employees? I bet you do. And oh, by the way, if you want some help, there are a bunch of other business leaders and other CEOs trying to do this too. So take a look at the Contest Capitalism website, subscribe to our newsletter, and of course, come join us at one of the chapter events. Because I want every CEO, business owner, and business leader running their business this way. So please rate and review this episode on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Send it to a friend or a colleague. Reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm always interested in your feedback, and I'm particularly interested to hear if you appreciated the in-person interview. And that wraps up our time together on Capitalism Done Right today, brought to you by CEO Exclusive and Contest Capitalism Atlanta. Until next time, please go out and do something amazing in the world with your business.